Thanks for letting us sort of set up this discussion. I want to point out one thing. There was a mistake in the announcement. I'm not Graham Smith from Birmingham, but Graham Smith spelled the other way from IBM.
You should probably put it over in the corner where you.
I'll do this, huh? Okay. Well, this is as good as it gets, and this is meant to be a discussion, not in the sense of the other discussions where it's an informal talk, but an actual discussion. I prepared about 35 minutes of discussion, and Todd promised that there'd be plenty to talk about. So,
I'm sure that would be true even if I weren't here.
The point is, I didn't prepare extra slides, so I hope I fill in the time. So the first order of business, though, is we already had a little bit of this. Time travel jokes that are available, including, you know, this one comes from John Smolin. You know, I send it to you tomorrow. Yeah. Discussions go over and over. Fine. They're actually, I think, pretty good. And the part I like most is, and that's the end of it. Now we move on to the outline, some background. So first I want to just remind you a little bit about closed time-like curves. They're not totally crazy, but they do give you this sort of problem with grandfather paradoxes. I'll just tell you about those. And I want to review the Deutsch model and discuss some of its implications for state distinguishing and computation. And then I'll put up a list of questions that I think we don't know the answer to and we would like to about how to do quantum mechanics when you have closed time-like curves. Around. Okay, so here's the basic model. You have time going this way, and the closed time-like curve, you know, it has, usually you call the entrance to it the mouth, and also the exit is a mouth. So there are two mouths of the closed time-like curve, and, you know, sometime in the, you know, you're going along and out pops something, and then sometime later something jumps in and goes back to the original time. Okay, so, fine. I have jokes available about this, if you like. And as I said, these are not entirely crazy ideas, so this is a bunch of sort of moderately, well, pretty respectable people on the top part of the list.
What about those bones?
Well, look, so this is essentially... All right, so up here we have basically, you know, physicists, people working on GR who are wondering, is it possible that you actually have solutions to the field equations that admit these closed time-like curves? And down here, well, one particular piece of work by Deutsch asks a slightly different question, which is, assuming we have a closed time-like curve, how are we supposed to do quantum mechanics there? Okay, and I think it's a reasonable question to ask, given that maybe the conclusion from up here is that perhaps they exist. You know, we can't prove they don't, let's say.
So how do you order the paper? I mean, so
No, no, no. Sort of the according to
logical fluctuations. What do you expect?
Yeah. Well, no, it's according to theme, right? Okay. So these are sort of physicists asking whether you can have a closed time-like curve. This is Deutsch asking how do you do quantum mechanics if you have one. And these are some recent, basically, quantum computing people applying Deutsch's work.
There's some fairly small theorems against that is classically positive energy, closed time-like curves to start with, the cannonball.
Right. Okay, so.
We were pointing out that the Gödel paper, was. He had hoped that it would produce such a revolution in physics as all the
other things. Well, I mean, Gödel doesn't satisfy the dominant energy conditions.
Yeah, so how plausible is it then for weak energy violation to fail?
And how plausible is negative energy?
Well, I mean, actually, we know that in quantum field theory, you can get negative energies, right? So the issue is whether you can get the right kind that allow a traversable wormhole that goes down like curves, which is less clear.
Well, there are considerable limits on the wormhole, that's correct.
Yeah.
Negative energy. But classically, it has negative energy.
Sorry. You won't have them to start.
Okay. So I know sort of next to nothing about that, but I think it's worth, well, thank you for, this is a discussion, right? Right.
Okay. Certainly one possible solution to all this whole problem. There are no closed time like curves. You don't have to worry about how to modify function.
Right, right. And I think some of the motivation for these things down here was really to say, even supposing you got them, we get these very implausible consequences computationally or information theoretically. So maybe this is also an argument against them. Okay, so from this slide on, we say, let's suppose we do have a closed time-like curve. How are we going to do quantum mechanics? Well, this is the first law of time travel, okay? First thing you do once you get a time machine is you go back in time and kill your grandfather, right? And
well, it's not necessarily the first thing, but you know, it just has to happen sooner or later.
Okay, great. So why is this a problem? Well, remember, so this is the ancient past. Here's your grandfather. He's born here. Here's your father's conception. Here's you. You jump in the thing. You come out before your father's conceived, and you interact with your grandfather in such a way to prevent the conception, right? So if you
saw... That's perfectly possible. If you changed it to the grandmother before. Because your grandfather could have donated to
the sperm bank. Yeah. Okay. But there's an interesting mathematical question here too, though, right? Which is, I can also imagine interactions if this is just some sort of two-level system, say, that for which there are initial conditions that don't really have any evolution. That don't lead to any reasonable state. So for example, if I put a 1 into this circuit, and this is a controlled knot, so if this system is in 1, it flips the bit here. So if this is in 1 and this is in 1, it maps it to 1, 0. And if this is in 1, this is in 0, it maps it to 1, 1. And if this is in 0, it does nothing, right? And the point is, you should think of 1 being alive and 0 being not alive or doesn't exist. And this circuit just... You can't think of any reasonable output to have here, given this interaction. Okay, so
the usual GR idea is that if you have closed time-like curves, then you don't have an initial value problem. That is, you don't have the idea that you can start up with your grandfather and then go.
You won't be able.
Wait a minute, let me finish. You have to sort of do the whole thing four-dimensional, and then the only four-dimensional things you consider are ones that are consistent. You don't have contradictions of this kind. So that's the way you get rid of them classically, even in GR, shown by enormous numbers of examples, and so forth. So I don't see this as a sort of serious problem. It's on failure of point of view or something from the GR.
Okay, so, but it seems a little uncomfortable for me, at least, if I can... do some measurements now to determine whether in the future I'm going to interact with it.
So what we learned from that is the closed time when it occurs, and I can be comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable also.
All right.
There isn't any paradox.
Well, I mean, maybe the better way to phrase this is that, you know, if you just kind of brainlessly apply what we thought we knew of physics without closed time like curves,
yes,
it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then, but the point that is going to happen in the slides is that, you know, you have to decide on some particular way of saying what is allowed and what's not allowed and what actually the evolution of the universe will be.
Well, I mean, so the world is four-dimensional, you know that. It's only in special space-times that you get the formula of globally hyperbolic space-time.
Sure.
But you get the formula of things as a natural outcome, otherwise you have to deal with all four dimensions.
Hmm. Well.
Okay, so let's assume this is a problem.
Yeah. Well.
We also want the space time to be reduced to standard.
Sorry, my hearing is not so good.
We also want the physics to reduce to more standard quantum mechanics when we're far away from the closed time network.
Well,
okay.
Look, so then,
I think he would say that's if you have a closed time like curve anywhere in this space time. Then you can't think of the rest of it in terms of initial value problems. That's the
Well, look, so there's lots of properties you might ideally like to have. So one of them is that you're in a region that's somewhere far away from close time light curve, so you can do physics normally. That seems reasonable, but with what you're proposing, it's not possible. The solution that you're proposing doesn't have that property. There's other possible things you can propose, and maybe we can talk about that later. But at least Deutsch's model, the one that you're about to show, does in fact have this property that if you're nowhere near the close time light curve, you don't go near it, then physics kind of is normal.
Right. So if you prefer to think about one proposal to deal with this apparent problem, which is not a problem, one proposal to deal with this sort of apparent problem, I guess, is this Deutsch's model, right? Which is that, let me draw a circuit of what's going on. So here I have some input state. I interact with something that just came out of the CTC, and after the interaction, something goes back into the CTC, and there's something that comes out again, right? So this is, Deutsch would call this the causality respecting bits, and these are the CTC bits, right? And he proposes to enforce basically consistency, and that is, you should ask that maybe the state that comes out of the CTC should be equal to the state that goes in up here, okay? Seems a reasonable thing to do. So then the evolution from the input to the output is just given by the original interaction between the input state and whatever came out of the CTC, this fixed point.
Okay. That's the bottom equation.
Yeah.
That defines the fixed point.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. So what this gives is...
What do you mean by a state coming out of the CTC? Usually states in quantum mechanics exist on space on the
hypersurface. Yeah.
There's not a state coming.
So what I want is to deal with the state down here and a state up here. And I want to enforce that if I trace out this system and just look at that state, it's equal to what if I trace if it's equal to what happens if I trace out up here. So it's sort of the weakest form of consistency you can, I guess, demand. Density matrices, yeah. That's right. I'll draw a picture with the whole quantum state in a second. And in fact, in this picture, you can evolve from a pure input to a mixed output. That's sort of crucial.
You know, it would help me if you could fix some. Is there one physical model of the closed thing?
How about this? There's a system here. And at some point, there's a second system. And that exists for a while. And I identify these two points. And I'm allowed to interact, maybe. That's what I'd like to think about.
But in general, you won't get a clean factorization between inside and outside. You could train this.
Yeah. Even in this one, it seems hard to analyze. Right? Yeah, basically.
So do we know existence?
We know existence of a fixed point as long as this can be mixed, and it better be. There's no fixed point if it can be pure, if it must be pure.
So if it's mixed, then you have a fixed point.
Yeah.
And it's unit.
No.
So
what do you do? Well, if
take a mixture of all of them.
Yeah, you could.
Or you don't know.
Yeah.
There's no.
Yeah. So Deutsch, I think, likes maximum entropy, but. There's no particular reason to choose it. Okay, so for example, with this C naught here, what happens is I have a 1 going in. 1 means alive, 0 means dead. And what happens is the fixed point is actually maximally mixed there. And what comes out is half the time alive, half the time dead. I don't know.
And so the reason that you have half a chance of being alive is that somebody had half a chance of killing your grandfather.
So yeah, maximally mixed comes out here and goes in there. So at least we satisfy consistency.
Is the C not a unitary transformation?
Yeah. So it maps 0, 0 to 0, 0, 0, 1 to 0, 1, 1, 0 to 1, 1, and 1, 1 to 1, 0.
But why do you expect these traces, density matrices for subsystems to evolve in the general?
They have the whole thing done.
Okay.
So why are there U's on that? They don't involve any more?
These U's? Oh, they could be something else, but I'll just imagine that, they come from applying some U to maybe some other system. But the easiest case is if they just interact unitarily.
So basically you're saying quantum mechanics is unitary, everything is as we knew it was before, except that there is now closed time on curves.
Yeah.
And that they enforce those, that fixed point condition. So it's basically the closed timeline curve anticipates something about what you're going to put in and adjusts to it by the time it gets there.
Jim, if it seems more reasonable to think of it this way, there are two subsystems at that point, and there's some Hamiltonian that describes their interaction, and they don't interact with each other. So,
for example, if we take this model over on the blackboard, and start with particles going into it, they'll be interacting all the time.
Sure. I mean, this is just a simplified model.
They
certainly won't be interacting before one of them exists. And
yes, that's right.
So effectively, there's some unitary there. Yeah. If you assume that their interaction, when they both exist, is described by the usual.
Not the word you close time comparison.
He's saying it's unitary during the time when they both exist. Also.
We're just interested in introducing sort of the mildest form of interaction between these two as we can, and seeing how, if we can make that sort of look reasonable, let's say. Right, so an extremely mild thing you can imagine is that, you know, just a unitary.
Is the curves that you brought A and B there, are they inside each other's light poles? I mean, you see what I mean? I mean, is there a unitary?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
From the space time point of view, it seems like highly artificial. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's very artificial. It's just, you know, some simple model that has a closed time like curve, so that you can talk about these things.
I think the goal, Pollister's goal, was he wanted to be able to talk about closed time like curves without actually having to solve for the wave function of the entire universe every time he wanted to say anything.
He did effectively sort of discuss that. I mean, I'm not entirely sure there's a sense of it, I'm not sure. In this little call, that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, so
that's right. So the point is to make the universe simple enough that you can say what's going on.
And that's what we're, that's what the model is.
You can't do it with the Schrodinger equation, right? What he tried to do,
right,
sort of pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can do it with a kind of path integral approach. Yeah. Gets a different answer.
Then the evolution is non-unitary.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's going to come out of this.
Well, this evolution is also non-unitary.
But it's in a different way.
That was known one
time. Right. So, I mean, this is Deutsch's model I'm still describing.
I'm making time travel jokes.
Okay. Yes, yes.
I think this was filled with a discussion afterwards.
Yeah, it's. Look, I think I've used up half the slides and the talk's half over. Okay, so here's something. I just want to sort of illustrate this model. Something strange about the model, which is if I take half an EPR pair in, take half an EPR pair, throw it into this CTC, so I just perform a swap of the two systems here. And look at what comes out. What comes out is this is non-normalized by accident, maximally mixed state. Right. So it breaks the interaction. Sorry, it breaks the correlation between what went in and what came out.
So even if it looks like that qubit that you send on this trip through the CTC never interacts with anything, it just travels through it. There's no, I mean, that swap is not like a xenon. It just says throw it in, and then after it comes out, look at the state, and it's gotten disentangled.
Right. So it's very different from it. You can't just sort of pull this and straighten it out.
One is a pretty classical correlation.
Same thing.
They become uncorrelated.
So this is, of course, what Deutsch liked to think about it. how Deutsch liked to think about it, which is it should have, well, actually, when you step in into the CTC, out you come in a second universe. And the thing that comes from an identical set of systems, but from this other universe, right? So this is why it's untangled. You're entangled with this guy over here in the other universe.
So if you go back again, Gavin, we go back to the other universe, or
no.
We come with
no.
You'll never get back to that.
And if you put both qubits through the closed time light curve, then they stay entangled.
If you put them both through the same closed time light,
if you put them through the same, well, then Deutsch is not really very specific, because he doesn't say what happens when you have two separate closed time light curves. But
it would be like if you refer to this as superactivation.
Yeah, but if you put them both through the closed time light curve, one of them goes through twice, now they're disentangled again.
Oh.
I'm not sure what that meant, but.
Well, if you put them both through together,
yeah.
Same one, then they stay entangled.
Yeah.
But if you put them both through, and then one of them goes through again,
yeah.
Now they're disentangled.
Right. Okay.
So consistent with his way of thinking about it.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Well, because, I mean, in some sense, they go through.
I mean,
you could still think of them as going into the other universe. It's just now they're entangled with each other.
Yeah, but it's still true that no matter how many times you put it through, it never becomes re-entangled. So there has to be an infinite number of universes. Maybe you could come up with some other picture that would mess up his. But anyway, go on.
Okay, so I guess I've described Deutsch's model. Now I want to tell you some things that happened to, or some things about it. So first is, I want to tell you about how you can use it to distinguish things. So this is Todd's work. And the idea is if you have two non-orthogonal pure states and a CTC that behaves like Deutsch suggests, you can actually map those two non-orthogonal states to orthogonal states. Okay, and it's fairly easy to convince yourself if this U is a unitary that maps psi to 1 and that at least it's you get a consistent set of fixed points, which is 0 gets mapped to 0. 0 has a fixed point that's equal to 0. So out comes the answer 0. And 1 is psi has a fixed point that's equal to 1. So the answer coming out is 1. So it seems to map these things to orthogonal state. Right. Yeah?
To what extent can we throw away the CTC entirely and just say, let's consider the following nonlinear model of quantum mechanics.
You're welcome to entirely. I mean,
in fact, that's part of the title of our paper, where this talk was, what does in nonlinear quantum mechanics do speed up computations or distinguish non-orthogonal space?
So you can think of this as an example.
I'm now answering one of those two questions. Well, what was that? We think it can't as much as some people previously thought.
So you're saying that you don't think this is correct?
Yes.
Not quite.
Well, not quite. This is correct, but the...
You should wait for the next one.
For the next one as well.
Honestly, I think the problem is in the previous
one.
No, sorry, the one before that. Well, the problem is that the interpretation of density matrices as probabilities in this model is totally broken.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you didn't really explain why that comes out of that picture, but you're going to.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to. Okay.
Nothing to do with the fact that you have no loss density.
Nothing to do with that. Okay. So this is just another picture of the same circuit, right? So if you put something horizontal and diagonal in, well, it's the same circuit. Okay, so in fact, better than just distinguishing two states, you can actually distinguish all four of these states. I'll show you a circuit for that in a minute. So 0, plus, 1, and minus. These are some non-orthogonal states. And one thing this seems to lead you to be able to do is communicate faster than light, right? So I just measure, if I want to send a 0, I measure 0 in the 0, 1 basis. If I want to send a 1, I measure in the plus, minus basis over here on my half of some EPR pair. And then the guy with the CTC can distinguish which of those it is. And if he found out I got a 0 or a 1, I was trying to send him a 0. If he found out I got a plus or a minus, I was trying to send him a 1.
I'll just point out that this is only a valid argument if Lorentz invariance is not true. Or rather, let me put it this way. This setup breaks Lorentz invariance in some way or another, right? Because does the measurement happen before or after this?
No. Why does that break Lorentz
invariance? It doesn't matter
very
much.
Because you have time
problem. No. I'll tell you why, right? Because if you do the measurement first and you believe in measurements, which is the most, which is getting into what Craig's going to say. There is such a thing as measurement, right? Then if the measurement happens first, then you get out either plus or minus or 0 or 1. However, if the procedure on the right side takes place, then it's an entangled state and you get out all four of them. Four states. Right. So that's
right.
So it really does make a difference which one happens before the other.
But it breaks some sort of global invariance.
Yeah, that's right.
Whole space-time, but any space time with a closed time like curve is well be global is not
yeah.
So isn't an issue of sort of.
Well, I think it's worse than that, but let's go.
Okay, so we're already seeing that it causes problems, this model. So for example, I could have done this measurement a long time in the future, right? So it seems that not only can I, maybe it's not a shock that I can send information back in time. There are closed time like curves running around, but I can send it way back in time, right? I can send it, let's say I had a tiny little CTC that only went from here to there. I can send it all the way back to that point. And we sort of thought maybe we could keep the misbehavior on the scale of the CTC perhaps, but it turns out it looks like you can't. Okay, so this is the circuit that distinguishes those four states. These are just sort of like controlled unitaries that get activated by zeros or ones, and what they do is well.
Now this is the part of the paper that got my attention because it was breaking the system.
Yeah. Okay, so this is just the circuit that can distinguish 0, 1, plus, and minus. Right?
So could we know that, to break BBA, or we need time machine or
probably almost any nonlinear quantum mechanics.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay, so it seems to break BB84 by distinguishing these zeros, ones, pluses, and minus. And in fact, a generalization can distinguish arbitrarily many states. I mean, I think this is really why Charlie got interested in the problem, right? Destroy BB84.
In arbitrarily many states, that means arbitrarily many states of a single qubit in a limited size space.
Yeah.
That's really impressive.
Yeah. And even more impressive is it seems to be able to distinguish the same state from itself. What do you mean? Okay. So I can distinguish 0 from 1, from plus, from minus, right? So what I do is, if I get this mixture of zeros and ones, well, I can tell you. Well, I get a 0 or a 1 in my measurement,
okay.
If I get a 0 or a 1, it was this one, and if I get a plus or a minus, it was this one, right? Okay, but those are the same state. So something's clearly wrong about how I've been using the word distinguish. Or how I interpret something as being the same state. Okay, so. I'm going to zoom through these because I feel like there's lots of time for discussion. Okay, so we propose the following definition of state discrimination. Well, I give you some state in an unknown some system in an unknown quantum state, and you should be and I remember which state I put it in. So I'm a referee. I have X, and
so A is the state that needs to be distinguished, and the R register is the one that remembers which one was given.
Yeah. So I'll remember what I gave you. You tell me what I gave you. So, the point is, if you do an operation on this A system, you better be able to get something that maintains the correlations with me. Okay. And it turns out that if you run the circuit that I just showed you on that, it doesn't quite do the trick. So I have this correlated state, and I run the circuit on it. And what can I do? Well, I can calculate what this fixed point is of the CTC is. And instead of using the CTC, I mean, I just calculated it, and I'm going to make my own copy of it.
So this is a single fixed point that is the appropriate fixed point for the mixture that you fed it, rather than four different fixed points for the four different states you might have fed.
Yeah. Okay, so in this case, now it seems like this CTC doesn't offer me any advantage. Okay, and what's the trouble? The trouble is this is a nonlinear theory, and nonlinear theories are not linear, right? Okay, so we have this nonlinear evolution on our, say, think of rho as a pure state. So this is like a zero, and this is like a plus. And we calculated what the evolution does to those two. But of course, the mixture of those two doesn't evolve. The mixture of these two inputs doesn't evolve to the mixture of the two outputs associated with those inputs, right? It might get mapped to something else, right? So somehow, this is sort of the key problem, I think. So for example, with these state distinguishing problems, we can look at the circuit and what it maps this input state to, instead of the correct output of just a mixture of the two inputs. Even though the circuit maps these pure states to sort of x, phi sub x to xx, on the labeled mixture, we find actually that we get a completely uncorrelated output. So the circuit doesn't really tell us anything about what the choice I made was. Okay. There's also been some work on trying to figure out what the power of a quantum computer would be if it had a CTC according to Deutsch's model.
So in the last slide, do you mean that the big ball system is still secure?
Or? Yes. Well, it depends. I mean,
it's very sensitive in how you're actually doing these things.
Yeah.
It depends whether you're generating really random numbers or pseudo random numbers or something else, you know, you're entangled. But maybe that doesn't depend really random versus but this is a problem, that there's kind of an interpretation issue.
Yeah. Well, of course, group doesn't work very well with pseudo random numbers.
Well, I mean, kind of, right? If it doesn't, obviously it's not going to be information theoretically secure, but in practice it could still be secure, right? You can do some things probably that you couldn't do classically. Although, maybe
if you take the CTC computer, then you can use it to break the NP complete problem and do the factorization and break the pseudo random number generator.
Well, that's true, too.
Yeah, and the problem is the use of mixtures is highly ambiguous. And what mixtures mean in ordinary quantum mechanics, they usually mean one of two things. One is basically a state of imperfect knowledge where there's an implication that there's some information that could be acquired that would bring you back to a mixed state. The other is where you have part of an entangled state. But the kind of mixtures that appear when you use Deutsch's criteria seem to have neither of those implications. They are in some sense real mixtures. But when Alice is preparing her system that's going to be sent to Bob and then sent through, she is, unless she actually uses a CTC to prepare that, hers is one of the normal kinds of mixtures, in which case it's really, what the actual state was is written down on some piece of paper. It's a mixture from Bob's point of view,
but
not a mixture from Alice's.
Sure, but the fact that you have the CTC in Deutsch's model, doing this swap circuit that you showed, lets you take an initial coin flip and convert it to two independent coin flips.
Yeah, and that's very weird.
Yes.
And even in the previous case, if you believe that all sort of all real randomness ultimately derives from quantum mechanics, then in the kind of main world's picture, this is all really a big entangled state, and then the argument does work there because entangled states also be growing. But
they become mixed states, right?
Right. But I will say something more about that later.
Okay. I think there will. Ubi. Okay, so I would say that at least I proposed a way to redefine distinguishing states where we can interpret closed time-like curves as not being useful, right? But it seems like, without the CTCs, these sort of two definitions that you might have imagined you could choose would be equivalent, but with them they become very different. Okay, and similarly, we'd like to look at what's the power of a computer that has a CTC. So you put in some input down here, and you get some answer out, and somehow you make use of these CTC bits. And I want to point out there's an algorithm due to Dave Bacon that shows how you can solve NP-complete problems using a CTC. So basically, what you do is you get a superposition of all the assignments of the variables in your problem, and then you do some operation to these guys that gives a 1 if that's a satisfying assumption, and a 0 if it's not, and you get these two states. If it's not a satisfiable formula, then you get a 0, and if it is a satisfiable formula, then you get something very close to 0 but slightly biased towards 1 because there were some instances. There were some assignments that gave a 1. Okay, and then essentially what you do is you use the CTC to distinguish these non-orthogonal states. Okay, again though, basically you have to ask yourself, well, what do you mean by distinguish these non-orthogonal states? And you have to, I guess, be very careful about what that might mean. Right. So the point is, if I gave you a mixture of two different inputs. In fact, this algorithm will fail. It will not be able to give you correlated outputs that tell you the answer to the problems that you're interested in. Okay. Again,
But it'll tell you the answer to one of the two problems.
Right? A random one.
If you answer either of them, then you've made progress.
Yeah, sure.
And if you do this a couple of times, you'll get better.
Can I just also say that you can make an argument that you don't need quantum mechanics, right? Classical computer with a CTC, it's far more powerful than a military.
But I think this argument that we're making spoils that classical argument. It's not even.
I don't see that, because classically everything is deterministic, so there's no mixtures.
Well, it will get to that. He'll get to it later on, and we'll say what you mean by computation. In other words, if a computation could only have ever had one input, it's a little bit more like a lookup table rather than a computation.
Let's say if you use Deutsch's model of CTCs or a classical version of it, you still get a problem. All right. And in fact, there are sort of even stronger results, which argue that a quantum computer assisted by CTCs would in fact give you all of P space. But that's only when you consider sort of, if I have a fixed input and I map it to an output reliably, this counts as evaluating my computation. If, on the other hand, you want to make sure that your computer succeeds on any labeled mixture of inputs, in fact, it seems like the computer can be substantially weaker than that, right? So, for example, if you look at BQPP, which we put an extra P on that because it's a different class, that requires the outputs and inputs to maintain correlations through your computation, it seems to be something more like BQPE/QPoly. So it's a little bit like getting quantum advice rather than P space, and this is supposed to be somewhat smaller than that.
But it's not really. It also includes some amount of computer voltages.
Oh, so that's
what we meant
by QPoly.
BQP/QPoly includes uncomputable things?
Yeah, sure.
We can give uncomputable advice.
Yeah.
Right, no, but this is the...
Of course, the CD/QPoly is used the other way, so maybe it's a different...
Oh yeah, this is the other one. Okay, so the idea is that if I sort of have a fixed pure state input and I only care about getting the correct output for that pure state, I have algorithms that seem to work. But if on the other hand, that that input is correlated with something, my algorithms don't seem to work. And the computer seems to lose some sort of power. And somehow, well, you get to choose your definitions, and I'd like to think of computing as providing me the right answer no matter how I choose the input, rather than sort of having to have a particular way to choose the input. So if you adopt this idea, then you get the idea that these CGCs are not so useful for computation. Okay, and this is just another way of saying that, which is that if you have a nonlinear system, its evolution can depend on system that it doesn't interact with. Okay, so for example, if I have some nonlinear operation on some part of this mixture in quantum mechanics, I just apply this n to the part of the mixture that it's operating on. But on the other hand, if this is nonlinear, in fact, it won't satisfy this property. Right? Okay, specifically, we had these circuits that seem to distinguish states that certainly don't if I give them a mixture. Okay, so here are some objections you might have to this suggestions or discussion. One is that, well, come on, if it works for every fixed input state, this is a good computation, right? That's okay, but it's boring, right? Because somehow this is more like having a lookup table. You're not allowed to pick the input to your computation. You just have to be lucky and find that sitting somewhere in the universe is a computer that somebody put the right input into. It happened to be pure, and you can get the answer to the one question you're interested in. So for example, you could find out the winner of 19 by 19 Go, but this computer would be sort of useless from the perspective of doing all-purpose computation. So for example, it would be no good for telling you 23 by 23 Go, who wins that. And here I would say that we don't know for sure the computation is weaker if you adopt this sort of labeled mixture requirement for computation. But for state discrimination, if you adopt the definition we choose, it's certainly much weaker than it seemed to be. And here's another objection that I think Todd likes, which is this, right? The same density matrix is not the same as the same mixture, right? Okay, but I can't see a way to actually build a theory that reduces quantum mechanics away from CTCs that can be mapped onto this.
The thing is, that state is actually true in ordinary quantum mechanics too, so it has nothing to do with CTCs. The same matrix is not the same as the same mixture.
No, not really.
I mean, in the sense that
I go to the Church of the Larger Hilbert
Space. You have a closed system, density matrix comes in at the beginning. Sure. There's nothing you can do that will Whereas in this case, that's not true.
Right, but okay, but if I am allowed to go outside that box and find other sources of information, then indeed different. Systems that are described by the same, or subsystems, I should say, described by the same density matrix are not necessarily the same. Right?
Well, they always will be.
There's other information you could go and find that we just
but that's.
Well, you go off, once you've got the whole purification, in fact, they are the same again.
No, because that's assuming that it's arising due to being in an integral state. But there, you get into this whole philosophical thing, proper versus improper mixtures. I actually never remember which is which. Which is proper and which is improper. But, you know, I'm
improper, I think. Traced entangled state.
Is improper. Yeah, which to me is sort of backwards.
If it's a larger open space, that's the only proper way of defining it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it means otherwise.
Because my point of view is, you use density matrices when you have limited knowledge, no matter what type of limitation that is.
So would it be a case that maybe whenever we have CTC, we just cannot use a Church and larger space, so we don't have the purification?
Well, Deutsch would say unless you're using CTCs,
that's certainly true. Because if you clone the density matrix, which you have to do with this model, then you can't purify them together. Right?
Well, you can't get the point of the picture is that there's somewhere away that part of the density matrix goes. right, that you can't touch?
You mean in the other universe?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, but since this only works, again, if you have an infinite set of universes, the picture breaks down.
Okay.
The distinction between a pure state input and a label mixture, it's also important when you consider nonlinear generalizations of monomials. You would also raise similar objections to conclusions like you can solve that P.
Yeah, so with this.
Have you been getting the time to do this?
Yeah, great. No. Well, for example, with this, there's a specific example that Lloyd analyzed, which is this Weinberg and Polchinski generalization, right? And that seems to give also completely different conclusions depending on whether you're interested in having fixed pure state inputs or potential mixed inputs.
So what you're saying really is specific to CTC. I guess one thing.
Maybe all of the nonlinear have the same problem. So if you think they're doing something very powerful, like considering what they do in pure states, see what they're doing with latent mixtures if you find it much less powerful.
I'll slightly qualify that nonlinear and deterministic.
Yeah.
But you didn't want to say something about reducing quantum mechanics when you go away from CTC regions.
Yeah.
That's specific to CTC.
That's right, yeah. Okay, and an objection that you should raise is that, you know, I've been emphasizing that you should consider this distribution over inputs to your computation, right? But how was that chosen? And shouldn't there be some distribution over that choice? Right? Okay, so these are the objections, and here are some questions I propose for discussion. There's still some time left. I mean, this is a pretty broad. But I like this question, which is there some sensible model where if you flip a coin and throw it in the CTC, it comes out and it has the same answer as what I threw in? That would be nice. There are some papers. There's one by Hawking that seems to suggest that you can get actually linear evolution in the presence of CTCs if you go to second quantization. So maybe just the problem is we shouldn't be trying to find a Schrodinger equation. And more generally. How do we know that we've chosen an input ensemble? What exactly is an input ensemble? If we can understand that, well, what's the right way to define computation? Do you feel strongly when you put something into a computer that that's in a pure state, or are you convinced that actually you're in a mixture of different choices that you would feel strongly about no matter what you put in? So, my slides are done. Discussion time.
So, for the second question. I mean, the difficulty hinges on your definition of sensible, right? I mean, none of these models are really sensible in the sense that they all seem to have really weird stuff going on. But it's certainly possible to come up with a model where you can flip a coin, throw it into the CTC, and it remains correlated. It's not that hard. I mean,
like these post-selected models.
Yes, for instance, that's that part.
Well, those have
other problems.
Yeah. Well, for example, I'd like to be able to choose initial conditions as I please, far away from where the CTC starts.
Right. I mean, so in the post-selection model, there's some measure zero of initial conditions that don't work. But there's a lot, like I said, there's a long list of things that you'd like. I don't know whether there's some possible correct way to do quantum mechanics that actually satisfies all of these things. But it seems very plausible that there's not, and that it's just a matter of choosing which of these unpalatable things is the least bad.
In the comparing this post-selected model with this Deutsch model, in the Deutsch model, if you throw something in to the CTC in a pure state, it comes out in a mixed state. In the post-selected model, throw it in, it comes out pure, but if you throw in a labeled mixture, one half of a labeled mixture, the labels get decorrelated, it comes out. So it's not useful for...
Not automatically, I mean,
yeah.
It can. If you can erase information in the post-selected model.
Yeah. but it can, it, I think
but
it's the
but
same.
You don't, but you don't, but you don't create. I don't think you can get two, I mean, you can't clone a classical probability.
No, no, I'm saying it's, it, it gets very weak if you apply it to a label mixture in the same way here. That is, it fails to distinguish non-orthogonal states, which it looks like it could do if you just consider what it does in pure states.
So what is this possible to do?
There's a light switch to the right of the board.
Please see that use I am in school at great expense.
Okay, so this is if we're going to have time on horizontal, we start off with we throw something into CTC and comes around and then interacts with itself is the idea. This is some interaction. So the idea of this post-selected model is to say this thing we regard as an entangled state, and as this is a Bell state, this is a Bell initial condition, this is a Bell final condition, and so this evolution is, this is our input here. If you could say, let's make a Bell measurement here, and if it doesn't come out in the same Bell state as we put in earlier down here, we throw the whole thing away and dismiss it. And if it does, that's the post-selected version of time travel. And so if you put in no interaction here, you put in a Bell state here, or you get a Bell state out here, and the I say we'll be able to just go through an alter. So that's the other thing. That doesn't get rid of the grandfather paradox universally. There's still a set of zero initial conditions.
But that's anionic. I mean, that's equivalent to anionic computing. In an anionic computing setting, I have these particles which can be their own antiparticles.
Yeah.
And so I can have exactly the scenario where I create two from vacuum. Go forward like this, and I have one coming in, and then one of the two from the vacuum pair fuse.
Sure, but
and conditional upon the charge of the last.
That's right.
So fusion, it looks like a
ballistic. That's right. So it's conditional. So you can do this. You can actually do this in
regular
mechanics if you're willing to post select.
Yeah.
But post on the curve, it would automatically post select for you.
You would sort of. What we call my institution and then IBM, that is an imperative Bell measurement in which the outcome is not allowed to be anything else.
But Charlie, so on that note, I don't understand what you're saying about labeled mixtures. Or at least if you have an entangled state, right, that's, you know, 0, 0, plus 1, plus, well, you can do more than just distinguish those two. The zero and the plus.
Yeah.
You can actually say, no, I'm deciding that actually it was the plus state by doing the grandfather paradox on zero, and then it's only the plus that has a component that's allowed.
Yeah, so that's the whole trouble with post-selection, because you're saying, I want the state to be what it would be if it succeeded, but I'm not allowed to use whether it succeeded as a communication channel. So that's
no. What do you mean? There's a communication channel. There is a communication. You can use this for communication.
Well, I'm saying, if I say the post-selected result, I don't want to say use whether the selection succeeded or not as a receiving message.
Why not?
Throw away the whole experiment.
The communication is the other way. The guy with the close time-like curve can communicate to the guy with the other half of the EPR pair.
I think that's right.
Because the guy with the close time-like curve can say it's a zero or it's a one, and that's the other guy's
version of CTCs has got all sorts of bad consequences also.
Yeah, the question is, are they worse than the ones that you had in the other model?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a matter of case.
Okay, so the argument using labeled mixtures bothers me on multiple levels, because a mixture is not an invariant object in quantum mechanics, right? I mean, why are you using a mixture when Alice, who prepares the state, knows exactly what state it's in? It's only Bob. To Bob, the state looks like a mixture. To Alice, the state looks like a pure state. So why are we using Bob's state and not Alice's?
Because he's assigned the task, right?
Yeah, but that means that the Bob's, depending on who you are, you expect physics to work differently, which is, to me, even more uncomfortable than the other stuff that happens in this system.
No, I mean, you have to make some decision about what the real state of affairs is. And
that's,
I mean, I think.
So I don't like the use of labeled mixtures.
Well, I think the issue is on the measurement and the collapse. So this was I think maybe was confusing me about what you said about it's not Lorentz invariant. In that you were assuming that when the guy at the end makes a measurement, that it collapses the state to one of those outcomes. But I'm not sure in this model that's the right way to go about doing that. That you could say instead he creates a mixture.
The problem. Well,
the two possible outcomes,
and
has a classical bit that tells him.
Okay, so this leads into the next question that I wanted to raise, which I don't know the answer to at all. But clearly, the Deutsch approach, and actually this approach too, are doing quantum mechanics in a background space-time, right? So if you believe in a quantum state for the universe, then we're really only working, if you will, in some branch of that universe, right? Which leads you to ask, well, how do you treat the state where in different branches closed timeline curves may or may not exist? Or even if, you know, if you believe in some kind of mini worlds picture, as Deutsch does, and you have branches that occur before the CTC exists, do those branches then interact with each other subsequently or not? It's very, I mean, his criterion doesn't tell you how big a state you should choose, right? Should you just choose the state of your local branch insofar as that's a sensible concept? Where the CTC comes into existence, or do you somehow, as soon as it does, you have to go back and look at it forward? Because it leads to questions where it's not clear how to approach the answer.
So, for instance,
instead of using a labeled mixture, so here's Allison, here's Bob, right? And Bob is in the future light code of Alice, right? So Alice decides by some method, say flipping a quantum coin, right? Or flipping a bunch of quantum coins. She chooses one of two to the impossible states of a cube, right? So they're all non-orthogonal. And she chooses that by flipping n quantum coins, by measuring in qubits, if you will, right? Now, she's done this measurement in a mini-worlds picture that divides you into one of two to the impossible orthogonal branches. So you're describing that by a labeled mixture, right? So there's a J. Here and the probabilities are all the same. Okay. But I could equally well say, well,
in a particular branch, it's actually a pure state, right? I mean, it's the state J answer, psi J. Now the point is to do the state, this the state distinguishability protocol, the CTC doesn't have to exist before you get the state. So Bob has a couple of these are people with godlike powers, right? Bob has a couple of wormholes. As soon as he receives the state, he accelerates one of them up to close to the speed of light for a while, and then decelerates it down again. He puts the state through the CTC that he's just created. He does the state distinguishability measurement, and then he accelerates the other one, and then decelerates it, so the CTC ceases to exist at that point.
That's not a fixed background space
time. No, it's not, right? So the point is, in that branch, you know, so if you limit yourself to that branch, well, I mean, in a sense it is, assuming that all of that is set up to go, and it's unaffected by
some quantum. No, but he's only doing it conditioned on, in principle, you could do it. He's only doing it conditioned on what he gets.
I could do that, or he could always do it. But the point is, you know, do then all of these different branches that somehow were treated separately suddenly interact with each other and become non-orthogonal? In addition to non-orthogonal states becoming orthogonal, you can have the opposite happen. You can have these things, you know, these decohering branches that would never have interfered with each other, suddenly do they interfere with each other or not? So the Deutsch criterion doesn't answer questions like that. And it's not clear that there's a well-defined answer here, right? And the same thing is true for the faster than light communication, right? It's essentially exactly the same setup, except that over here, Alice makes some measurement. Alice retains half of the state, and over here,
it seems to me that if you're in doubt, you have to keep as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe that's true, but I don't know what that means, right? Because then, you know, this is itself is presumably part of a branch that includes, like, a wave function that includes dramatically different background space time.
So that's pretty confusing. So what problem are you seeing here? I'm trying to see
the problem is that not only is this choice of state unclear, right, but it's even unclear how much of the universal wave function you should include when you're applying the Deutsch criterion. Because it seems like it can only be applied in a branch, if you will, unless you believe somehow that the space-time really is fixed, right? So that there is no quantum state of space-time. If you believe that, then I guess it's okay. But if you think there can be, you know, that there is something like quantum cosmology where there are superpositions of different space-times, then I don't know how to apply Deutsch's criterion to that. I think it clearly can only be intended to be applied in a particular branch, but then that becomes very important.
You could tell from Deutsch, you should be awake by now.
Only because you called him 20 minutes from now.
So I guess that's the end. We can keep talking whoever wants to, but
so in fact there's a seminar.